One of the biggest lessons I've learned in my journey as an entrepreneur is the importance of streamlining processes. Early on, I faced a lot of challenges managing the various aspects of my businesses, especially when it came to logistics. I was concerned that things wouldn't get done right, and it was taking up too much of my time. But once I found the right tools and systems, it allowed me to focus on what really matters, providing value and growing my business. That's why I want to share something with you today that can have the same impact on your business, especially if you're in e-commerce. We all know that shipping can be a major time suck and drain on our resources. That's where ShipStation comes in. ShipStation is a multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with whatever platform you're selling on. It's designed to streamline your shipping process so you can focus on scaling your business, even if you're out of the office or on a well-deserved vacation. I've been using ShipStation and can honestly say it's a game changer. The ability to automate shipping tasks and manage everything from one simple dashboard has not only saved me time, but also significantly reduced costs. It's tools like these that have helped me scale my businesses faster than I ever imagined. And the best part? Over 130,000 companies have experienced similar growth with ShipStation, and 98% of those who use it for more than a year stick with it for life. So if you're looking to work less and ship more, ShipStation is the tool you need to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities. Head over to ShipStation.com and use code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code BOOK, B-O-O-K. I have my favorite quote, which I think is applicable for this evening, which is, you're either humble or you're about to be. And doing a show that's different and doing a show for the first time on a live stage is very humbling when you sit and realize where you started. And I remember when I started my speaking career, I would speak in front of thousands of people and two people, and it didn't matter to me. And it didn't matter to me because it was touching the people that showed up. And it's not just all of you that showed up with all the challenges that we had today with all types of logistical problems around the world, but more importantly, to show up to be part of a community, to impact your life, hopefully touch someone with a nugget or two that gives you a different way of looking at things. And when I sat down for the first time with Dane Cook, I said, wow, this is something special. And I think he felt the same way, that we had a unique way of communicating with one another, not just to have fun, as you'll see, he's much funnier than I am, but the wisdom from the pain that we both have had in our lives to illuminate that no matter how successful you are and how beautiful and fun things look in social media and on the news about people, that everybody gets kicked in the face every day. And we want to teach people how to deal with real life. And I thought getting together with Dane, and was surprised when he asked me if I would do this, and I'm sure he's also thinking you're either humble or you're about to be, but we are both very excited that all of you are here. I always say my frequency is my neighborhood, and I surround myself with people who want to help each other and know people that can help each other, good-hearted people. And to the testament of that, it was amazing how many people, when they found out we were doing this, they may not have bought as many tickets as I would have hoped, but they showed up and wanted to participate. And I just want to give another big round of applause. Rob Riggle was in London filming a movie, and he saw what Dane and I were doing, and he said, that's different, and I want to be a part of it. Would you mind if I came? Whatever you guys need me to do, I'd love to do it. And there's a lot of big-time stars like Rob Riggle that would not show up at all or volunteer to show up, and he came with his family to pour into the community, and it was just a blessing and humility that both of these guys would try something out to help our community of people, to try to help your lives to a better place, a better position, a better situation. So let's give Rob Riggle a big round of applause once again. Thank you. But anyway, this concept's going to kick ass. You may never see it again on a stage, but you certainly will see it on the screen. And I believe that the world, Shakespeare had it right. The whole world is a stage. I don't know how he knew that Hamlet and other creations of his would be seen even today all around the world, but the whole world is definitely our stage. One thing I've learned about the whole world being your stage is the bigger the stage is physically, and the bigger the people and the communities around those stages, the more access you have to the whole world. And so it only takes a few particle lights to overcome a million particles of darkness. So I hope today that we prove that philosophy. It's a strategy of mine that has helped me through and to a place that I never dreamed of, and I want to help you do the same. So as these particle lights come on stage and we elevate, hopefully, our frequency so that we can do more good in a time when people aren't appreciating our differences. And I think you'll realize that there's a big difference between Dane and I, but we both appreciate the differences between the two of us. Every single one of you is a miracle. There's 8 billion people here. There's nobody like you. And we need to learn not to agree with one another. You don't have to agree. I've been married 27 years. I'm still trying to figure that out. But you need to appreciate the differences. That means add value to one another. Whether it's your religion, politics, or any other socioeconomic issues that you have that seems to separate the people that are most relative to you, my mission is to relieve and reduce and resolve all of that. Let's learn to understand and appreciate our differences, and I promise you that we can live in the abundant, infinite system of thought that we all belong to, a world of more than enough of everything for everyone. And on that note, this guy's more than enough for everyone because he is incredible. I'm a huge fan of his. It's an honor that he's here on this stage with me. I will probably watch this thing 50 times again and again, pinching myself that I someday would share a stage with Rob Riggle and Dane Cook, let alone Marshall Faulk and all the other guys that I get to, and women that I get to spend my life with. So thank you up there. We'll see them soon. But if you guys can elevate our energy and bring up the incredible Dane Cook, come and join me, brother.
One of the biggest lessons I've learned in my journey as an entrepreneur is the importance of streamlining processes. Early on, I faced a lot of challenges managing the various aspects of my businesses, especially when it came to logistics. I was concerned that things wouldn't get done right, and it was taking up too much of my time. But once I found the right tools and systems, it allowed me to focus on what really matters, providing value and growing my business. That's why I want to share something with you today that can have the same impact on your business, especially if you're in e-commerce. We all know that shipping can be a major time suck and drain on our resources. That's where ShipStation comes in. ShipStation is a multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with whatever platform you're selling on. It's designed to streamline your shipping process so you can focus on scaling your business, even if you're out of the office or on a well-deserved vacation. I've been using ShipStation and can honestly say it's a game changer. The ability to automate shipping tasks and manage everything from one simple dashboard has not only saved me time, but also significantly reduced costs. It's tools like these that have helped me scale my businesses faster than I ever imagined. And the best part? Over 130,000 companies have experienced similar growth with ShipStation. And 98% of those who use it for more than a year stick with it for life. So if you're looking to work less and ship more, ShipStation is the tool you need to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities. Head over to ShipStation.com and use code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code BOOK, B-O-O-K.
Thank you so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate being a part of this with David, and also one more time for Mr. Rob Riggle being here tonight. And couldn't be more excited to sit and have yet another in-depth conversation with you, David. So great to see you, man.
Great to see you. I'm going to start off with the obvious. Sometimes things in life don't end up the way you plan.
And I will tell you, in all humility, I have worked really, really hard to pull this off. It's something that's outside of mine and your comfort zone. And trying to detach my emotions from outcomes, my purpose of being here is fulfilled and will continue to be amplified by the content that we create tonight and the people that we help. For you, in your life, sometimes things don't happen the way that you plan. How do you deal with the detachment of the emotions and find that purpose, the light, the love, and the lessons when things may not, in the immediate outcome, look as if it's promoting you, protecting you, and loving you?
It would be really easy to default, as I've done stand-up comedy for 3+ decades, into something funny. Because truly, and this is both like, real world answer is, I want to be funny in that moment. The humor was always like a safe haven growing up for my family. We were all very funny. We were fortunate to all, be able to come to the dinner table with, some whatever. It might have been a new impression somebody was working on or something that, a great story, a bunch of storytellers in my family. But we also dealt with some real hardships. My dad drank, and it was almost like living. I describe it now as like I didn't realize till I was much older. We lived on a tilt. You never really felt like you were on solid ground. So you're always looking for a way to circumvent that pain. So humor was a go-to then, and even when you're asking me this question, like my original knee jerk is into going into somewhere funny. But in truth, the answer is both the crowd that I want to be in front of to feel purpose, to entertain people, to feel like I'm making good use of the gift and what I've worked on for many, many years to provide both a great show, but what I need from that collaborative experience. But the crowd isn't just there to get those laughs. Sometimes that crowd is there for me to truly share that experience. If I find humor in it, that's great for a comedy show. But even if I'm just exploring my feelings, I'm present. I'm real. On any given night, early in the week, you could find most comedians and myself were kind of working out something new. And that means taking a hardship. You took one on the chin, you failed miserably, ass up, whatever you want to call it. That usually ends up in some way, shape, or form on stage. What people most of the time don't see is when you're first sharing that experience, it's a little ragtag, but it's pure, right? It's really honest, and that's how you assemble funny around it, by being relatable with a crowd of people about something that everybody, whether it's funny to them because they've experienced it or funny because they're living vicariously through you, I have this good fortune of being able to do kind of like this version of therapy that then ends up turning into comedy. I think previous to taking onto a stage, let's get the traditional essentials out of the way. You have to have people around you that love you throughout. People that love you, even realizing that we're all flawed individuals. We're all doing the best that we can to try to come through for ourselves, for our wives, for our families, for our business partners. And if you have people that can help you to immediately identify that you're like a doing the best that I can kind of person, that's gratifying, because then you're starting off your day knowing like the people that are surrounding me, they already know my intent. They already know that, I'm not coming into a situation, willy-nilly, that I'm coming into something that I really want to see. I want to see it through, and I want to see people succeed from it. So I think, again, essentials that we all kind of like know and accept is, think of it like this. I don't know why I've always used this as like the visual. You have like 8 spaces around you. You have 8 pockets of space, and those eight spaces for me, and I believe for you, should be filled with the people, places, and things that you love, and the people, places, and things that love you back. And if you can sort of identify those people, places, and things around you, and get very, you know, take testify, you know, and say, who here is looking to bring the best out of me in an assertive nature, in a collaborative nature, friendly, you know, mindful way. Those are the eight spaces that I think that you want to continue to help flourish. If you look around and you find that several of those spaces, and by the way, it doesn't need to be eight. You can change it to whatever. Make the, you know, if you want to be like, hey, can I have 16 spaces? It's like, have at it. Yes. But I truly believe that you need to, you know, sort of take stock and start to realize that if you have, you know, these people, places, and things around you that are, you know, pulling your energy into places that are negative, unnecessary, unhealthy, and a myriad of other uns, then you have to do the hard thing, which is I need to start removing and remodeling these eight spaces around me so that I can have proper, you know, adult communicado in things that know at the heart of who I am, what my intentions are, and how those eight spaces, and particularly the people around you, are proactive with you to help you to get either back to, you know, full strength, or will help you through and problem solve and find solutions. So you say, okay, the eight spaces around me, what if you're 0 for 8? What is the old, David, like, what's that? They used to say, like, if all the people around you are assholes, then it's you?
Right, right.
Okay.
Who's the common denominator?
Right. It's like, so I think that, I don't think it's as hardcore as that. I think it's really looking and realizing if those eight spaces are things that are not fulfilling and healthy and moving you towards something that's inciting excitement with you on day to day. It's not that you're necessarily the problem, but you may have to really do a deep dive, sweep your side of the street, and start realizing you deserve better. And maybe that, you know, if you've been treated unfairly in life, or you've treated others unfairly in life, that it might be time to sweep your side of the street and identify that. You know, it's a hard thing, because I think a lot of people, when they sit in seats like this, and even myself, you're looking for the bullet points and the you know, things I can put up on my post-it on the mirror that you know, reinforce me. And the Boston in me, the assertive Boston kid in me, is here to tell you that it wasn't until I looked in the mirror one day and realized I too was part of the problem, and I had to look at my past, look at how I grew up, look at how I was the adult child of an alcoholic, and some of the things that I encountered in this, you know, not secure, tilted, you know, I didn't know what it was to live on solid ground. I didn't know what boundaries were. I remember going to a therapist, and he was like, what are your boundaries? And I was like, everybody's invited. If you smile at me and you're nice, you can have, you know, full access. And it really was like the beginning of some of my kind of aha moments, where I realized, oh wow, like, you got to be able to wake up in the morning. You have to identify what it is that you want out of this life, but then you have to do the hardest thing. And this is where not everybody likes what I'm about to say, but the reality is you have to look in that mirror and you have to own all of it. And that includes the things that you've done. That includes the bad behaviors, or the ignored education, or just the shitty choices that you've made, that you might either be looking for a way to self-forgive or reach out to others and seek forgiveness. It isn't all about, like, what are these things that I can have that will enrich me so that I win? Listen, David alone could give you, and if you know, if you've watched anything or read anything, there's 10 things of value that will ensure a win for you because of David. That's the end of the story. Take any 10 things that David said, trust me on this, I've been through hell and back, I've capsized, I've reestablished, and then I won again, harder to win again, by the way. Take those 10 things. If you're building those 10 great pillars off of a shaky self foundation, you're not going to go the distance. And in fact, you're going to waste a lot more time because you'll be actually adding value to your life on a surface that isn't quite sturdy enough to even handle the good fortune that does come when you start implementing. So that was my short answer to your question. But I think that I hope that what a lot of what we get tonight, and I know what I've gotten from you and what we've been able to sort of harangue as we chat with people is it's about not just the affirmations, but looking in the mirror and really going, who am I? What am I about? What do I stand for? Then I have to own my personal constitution. I got to stick with it. I got to believe in myself because this is who I am. And then I have to clean house and prepare to be a present, a person who is very present. And if you're bringing that baggage and you're bringing bullshit and you're bringing the lies you tell yourself and you're bringing people that are on a, you know, pull out coattail and just telling you what you want, add the 10 things that David's going to explore with us tonight. But I promise you at some point you're like, oh man, why didn't that work for me? And then the last thing I'll say about this, and it's just something to think about. Like, I like food for thought conversations. It's all about, like, there's flecks in these answers, and one little fleck might mean something to you. It's hard to look at a day. It's hard to look at a month or a year. And I've had failing years where I'd look and go, that year sucked. I could then look later and say, no, but there was moments of joy, and that was the year that I met somebody that I really, I did have a new idea, didn't come to fruition until the next year. So it's hard, as we're all looking for wins and that feeling of winning and like, oh, why is life, it feels like it's kicking me in the teeth and it's hard and it feels like for a lot of people, and I've been in this moment where it's like, man, it just feels like it's too hard for me. Why does it seem like I'm getting knocked down? It seems like I'm getting knocked down more than some of the other people that I've been keeping my eye on. But the reality is this, and I hope this helps you in some way. There's like 10 narratives going on in your life every day, every week. There's a family member who's sick. There's somebody who's got a newborn, and they don't. You've got like all this hope for this one job thing, and then that's just a few. And then your faith, and like, how can I? I've had a tumultuous relationship with my faith, and that's 4. Whatever your 10 are, it's not that you're losing a lot. It's not. It's the perception, because those 10 narratives don't always lead to winning moments. And so it's look at the stats. Look at the it is a numbers game. Stop convincing yourself you're taking hits. We're all taking hits every day. But if you can remember and really recalibrate your thinking to go, oh, it just seems like I'm taking a lot of L's, because that's what life is. 10 storylines are going on around me, and they can't all be the ending we want today or this week. And it's not supposed to be. So we have to relinquish that power that life isn't going to give you the 10 storylines that lead to like, win, win, win. I'm rocking. It's great. We're next level. Level up. It's just not. And it never will be. And if you think it is, that's what makes a lot of people quit or slow down or lose faith, lose momentum, is because it feels like you're not winning. It feels like other people are moving past you. It's just all the way. It's like an illusion. Nobody's moving past you. It's not a racer. It's everybody's moving about with the same 10 or 15 storylines that ultimately are hard and tough for everybody every day. So just remember that It's always about, like, you can find wins, even though there's going to be moments that are happening around you that are seemingly never-ending hits. You got to recalibrate that thinking.
Whew. That's one deep comedian.
Let's give him a round of applause. There's a lot to unravel there, but...
It's tough to deliver all that without going for a laugh, by the way.
Yeah.
I could take a
Congratulations.
Breath.
Congratulations. Okay. I went for the laugh right away, so...
There's so many things to unravel. The one thing that really stood out beyond understanding your relationship with that which bleeds you and that which feeds you, which I'll probably get into later, I wanted to get to the most obvious one, was that most people deal with a false sense of accountability. And I'll ask people, well, you got to be accountable, and they'll immediately say, well, I am responsible, but are you? And the reason is that most people don't think about the purpose of accountability. The purpose of accountability is the purpose of life. And there's these rules in Sanskrit, which is before they even had writing, the rules of being human. And the first rule of being human, beyond you have a body, is life is about lessons. The only way that you learn lessons is through the purpose of accountability, which says, what did I do in this situation, with all the different narratives you have and all the different bleeders and feeders and all the different teams that you may play on as a point guard, a center, a coach, an owner, whatever your role is on multiple teams in your life, it's what am I doing to be responsible for this L, this lesson, not necessarily a loss,
right.
And most importantly, what am I supposed to learn from it? Why? Because life's about lessons, and the lessons keep on coming until you learn them. If you learn a lesson, there is no dis-ease. There's only ease. It's like giving you the teacher's guide. Calculus is simple when you have the teacher's guide, because you have all the answers to the questions, and you have the lessons. But there's two other things that a lot of people don't look at in the purpose of accountability. The second is, what did I do to attract this to myself? We are all vibrating, energetic beings, and if you look around you, and you feel low energy, what do you think you have? If you look around you and there's not these extraordinary people and events and circumstances, then change your vibration. We are all vibrating energetic beings that attract like energy. And I use as a litmus test of accountability and purpose in my life to say, wow, how is it that these guys are calling me? Or why is it I accidentally bumped into this person at a gated airport, and there's this symbiotic frequency that we have, that neighborhood that everybody here has? And then the third one is most interesting, which you touched upon a lot, in the way that I interpret it in the purpose of accountability, is what am I doing to participate in the perception, and what am I supposed to learn from it? See, we're just participating in a meaning. And the power that most people fail to take advantage of in life, and both of us through the high times and the low times, and we're blessed to have both, hopefully more of one than the other, is that we know we have the power to give meaning to everything we see. And it's not a false sense of optimism. It's just I'm aligning the meaning of my setbacks, failures, and mistakes, the defining moments of my life, the historical relevances of my life with where I want to be. With where I want to be, or even better. And it really takes, within the context of purpose, of accountability, the understanding that it takes wisdom, which is learning the lessons, but also you mentioned faith. It's wisdom and faith that shorten the distance of resistance between you and where you want to be or better. You see, it's already there. This is an abundant, infinite, unified system of thought with everything. So what are you doing to interfere with it? Are you not moving correctly? Are you not talking correctly? Are you not thinking correctly? What are you doing to create dis-ease in your life? And so I wanted to initially just start on that accountability side of things and touch on that. But I do want to ask you about the bleeding and feeding, because I've been dealing with, as my brand has grown and I've attracted wonderful people that are here tonight, you also attract a lot of more bleeders. Or maybe you allow things to bleed you that you didn't allow them before. I have to be very honest, I was sitting backstage, and I was lonelier than I've been in a long time. Everyone I love was out there, and I was sitting in a green room by myself. Right. You with your family, Rob Riggles with his family, and my family's all up there having a great time. And that's not what I want. Right. And I felt like, wow, this thing's really bleeding me. How do you determine? Because it's okay. My mom's 81 years old. I love the fact that she bleeds me because I bled her for so long as a child. My kids bleed me. How do you distinguish in such a hyperactive lifestyle with so many things pulling at you to not be bled and to feel separate or inferior or lonely or some of the feelings that have occurred in my life when we reach certain pinnacles where everyone thinks, oh, he must just be back there having a ball.
Right, right. Yeah, it's, by the way, you could have come to my dressing room. We were 5 feet down the hall. Come over, knock on the door.
No, I was just feeling sorry for myself.
I love this question. And what's interesting is, working backwards, I have fear of abandonment issues. Where I finally realized that came from, very long story short, is that my mom was very phobic, agoraphobia, and like, she almost had like a potpourri of phobias. She was a very tough person, and she could be tenacious, but she dealt with a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, but the phobias were the trickiest thing. And what I realized was, and this is true also of my younger sister, Courtney, that we were both in the womb when she was at her most phobic. So it was like the absorption of fear, of worry, of concern. And it took me probably the longest, the longest journey of my life was realizing, why is it that I can't really truly enjoy being alone? And why can't I, in those moments, when the bleeders or whatever, haters, or just the unfortunate circumstances that life's...
people that are hurting people.
Yeah, right, exactly. What's even worse is the hurt people who hurt the people who hurt the people who hurt the people, right? You ever get one of those, it's like... I found that it was difficult for a number of years for me to find... that in that silence, you know, some people call it meditation, you know, prayer, reflection, that there's a lot of answers. Your true answers come to you in those moments where you can find a beautiful view and just take a little bit of time for yourself to really be introspective. I don't think I was introspective probably until like my mid to late 30s. I just kept going. I just didn't stop because stopping was scary. Now you will find that like I enjoy being by myself. If the roles were reversed and my wife and family couldn't come tonight, then yes, I probably would also be on social media. We all get the thing where it's like, let me just check the stuff and see. But I do find, especially knowing I was going to be able to participate in something like this tonight, I want to be in my thoughts. I want to be able to reflect and probably continue to do anything I can to stay present. Like David, I don't even know if you realize, for a lot of years, as a kid who had a lot of like self-loathing, I did not like myself as a young person. Really like in a way that was, I love that kid. I'm sorry that I felt the way I did oftentimes about myself. There was like a myriad of things that I just, you know, kind of heaped on myself. And I felt like solitude was like a punishment. You know, I didn't know how to enjoy it as a moment of like introspection and reflection the way I can now. So for years it was this, either I'm running away from the kid that I don't want to be anymore because now I'm succeeding and I'm a comedian and I'm getting the laughs and I'm making a few bucks and then ego comes in and I'm the belle of the ball and then I'm meeting girls and like all these great distractions from the silence. No more silence. You know, then the internet comes in, definitely no more silence. I got window to the world if I need to, you know. And then there was a number of years where it was like I was just constantly running to the next thing that I thought was gonna keep me ahead of the pack, right? To keep me from feeling like a normie, because that might mean that I actually have to take stock, right? And so when I finally, and where did that, like, some people want to understand, like, well, then how could you do stand-up? Like, how did that kid do stand-up and then insulate and protect myself with this, what I thought was a superpower when I was younger? Like, I can get on stage and I feel, like, strong. I'm not scared. I was never scared. People would say, like, is it scary doing stand-up comedy? I used to say, it's scarier being the other person. The onstage guy, I love him. I wish I could live like that. I used to say, I wish I could put a bed up there and wake up there and just perform all the way. Like, that's how I actually thought. I thought this would keep me happy. The spotlight wasn't just for the sake of, like, showmanship and all the things that I do love about creativity at my core, but it was a way to not sit out in the dark and feel like, allow myself to... penalize myself for realizing that I wasn't a perfect kid. Why didn't the other kids want me to participate? Why? So I go to, I'm 16 and a half years old. I've got my permit, I guess. I don't even know if I have my driver's license. And I had a little shitty Chevy Cavalier, brown Chevy Cavalier that I bought with money that I got when I worked I was a dietary aide at a nursing home. That's making, you know, the food for the elderly residents, and I'm working there, I'm making money so I can, you know, have a little car that I can run around in. And when I'm, you know, working there, I'm entertaining the residents. Sometimes I'm not even really supposed to be delivering the food. I'm just, you know, putting grilled cheeses together and all that, or washing dishes. But I would go out and I would spend time with the, you know, some of the people, 80, 90, 100-year-old people, telling me the story of their life. Telling me, like, it was like Yoda was in every room. It was like wisdom, wisdom, wisdom. And then one lady who would be like, get the fuck out of here. Like, there was always, like, wisdoms, and then Miss Clemente. I'll never forget. Man, she rode my ass when I came down that hall. But working there, I get this little car that, you know, was barely street legal. And I feel insignificant, but I love comedy and I watch comedy and I think to myself, I wonder if I could ever be like these people on TV that are funny. But I feel so, I'm introvert. Like, just keep adding things to the list that make me feel like I don't really belong anywhere and that nobody really wants me to participate because I'm kind of the odd kid who doesn't know how to make you feel comfortable. I get in my Chevy Cavalier, I drive to Revere Beach on the rainiest, you know, downpour of a day. And I park and I walk out onto the beach and it's pouring rain on me and I'm crying and I'm standing in the rain in the middle of an empty Revere Beach. And it was like I was in The Notebook, but there was no girl who was ever going to love me. I wasn't about to find love, and love wasn't finding me. I was just a boy crying on a beach. And I did what I guess you would call like almost like a primal scream in the rain. And then I begged God in the universe, please don't let me have an insignificant life. And I screamed it. Please, I don't want to be insignificant. I mean, I get emotional now thinking of it because I really felt like a nobody. And there I was, like, you know, and I'm pouring my heart out to, you know, as the rain is coming down. And I remember one of the things that I said. I remember I said, God, give me the roller coaster. I'll take the roller coaster. I want the high highs and I'll take the low lows. And I remember that. Everything else I'd have to kind of paraphrase, but I remember that in particular. And it wasn't so much as years went by that I realized it was like, yeah, I was like doing that thing where I was asking just, God, hook me up, right? But I was still in that moment, I remember reflecting on it and thinking, like, I want to be significant so I can also give back in some way. Because my mom was already teaching me the value of, she would say, listen, people can suck, but there's some great ones out there. And you got to find them. And they're going to need your help. She was already trying to lift me up. Like, you will, people will need you, Dane. And so there I was, and I'm, give me the, and what I didn't know till years later was I was talking to me. I was shouting inward. I did want God or the what I believed in my faith at that point to help, you know, but really what I was doing is I was purging myself of this negative person that I saw myself as. So all these years later, when I'm feeling like, you know, the world is bleeding me, or there's haters, or I'm in like the pendulum swing has put me into a place where I'm bored and I'm not creative and I'm in a rut. Now I have my wife. I've got the best wife. I have my best friend in the world is my wife. I've got best friends in the world that are like my road dogs that fill those eight spaces, and they know how to communicate with me on two levels. They know how to help me when they see that I'm discombobulated, but they know they can count on my loyalty to help them. So all of these things, if any of this has come together, like just realizing that in that solitude, listen to the voice, communicate it to you, find that mirror, go talk to yourself, talk yourself up, find those ways to like get the truth out, judge and jury on yourself. My dad used to say, tomorrow's the first day of the rest of your life. Let your feet hit the deck and let's go. Tomorrow is the first day of the rest of your life. You take stock, and hopefully you will find, as I have found, and David, even though tonight in the dressing room wasn't a moment of total comfort, you will find that in those moments of silence, like celebrating alone, will be the greatest victory. Nothing that you ever get will feel as good as knowing you received because you built yourself up and prepared yourself to receive.
Ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing? Wow. So when I was in the 11th grade, I was this size, praying to grow so I could be a professional football player like Marshall Faulk. I took AP English, and I had this wonderful professor that taught me existentialism with Kierkegaard, and he said, well, your entire life, you're going to explore these two words, and it's only three letters, and you're not going to understand what we're teaching in class, and you may get an A on our test in existentialism, but you're not going to understand these two words. But I want you to pay attention because I'm planting a seed for you and maybe for trees that I may never sit under, but these two words are I am. And when he taught those two words, I am, I thought to myself, yeah, I get it. I am. I'm here, and I'm going to do the best I can, and I came up with some great explanation. And as I get older and older and older, I've spent hours and hours and hours exploring what I think is the greatest energy suck, especially because of social media, these two words. Because the more I explore I am, the more I have to look at the energy gap between I am and this is what I want people to think I am. And every time I look at my Instagram or someone else's, the TikTok or the LinkedIn or the Facebook or any other place that I see or big stages, and I say to myself, where am I am? And to that measure, I think everyone suffers from that challenge of the energy suck that exists between who we really know, who we are. I remember sitting on my bed when I was at my lowest point, thinking that I hated my mom, I hated my dad, I hated my best friend, and believe it or not, at that time, I even hated my wife. And at that time, my wife had told me that I better take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. In other words, she said, you better figure out who I am. And I explored that and have still, for 18 years, looked at who I am. And I know that when I am mad at other people that I'm screaming at myself. When I have a need to be offended, I know who I am. And I spend minutes and moments in that energy suck. And I think it's really important to reflect on that story that Dane told, because to me, it just kept shouting to me this existential young experience of, you realized that I am now on a journey to figure out I am. What am I doing to interfere with it, as I previously mentioned? And I know we have some extraordinary people here today to delve into more of that, but I hope that everybody out here takes what resonates with them and looks within to figure out I am. And let's help our kids figure out I am, not this is what I want people to think I am. And in that journey, I think we can have this healing process of this unified system that I believe we're ignoring. And I appreciate that story and the vulnerability, because I know, especially for comedians, they usually use humor to amplify their vulnerability. And it's so refreshing, and I'm loving this tremendously. So I want to thank you again. I love this, because I always ask for a takeaway. And one of the most frustrating things about speaking, teaching, and mentoring is someone will come up to me all the time and say, oh, my God, your book changed my life. That speech changed my life. And my automatic question is, why? And then you get sometimes, because we feel an emotional aftertaste, but we really haven't a takeaway. And I'm always happy if you just have one takeaway from an experience like this, something that you can hold on to and utilize and empower others with. And for me, by far, the takeaway of tonight is the truth vibrates the fastest. And when I say that, everything vibrates. The earth vibrates the slowest, then plants, animals, humans, sound, light, and then thought. And we can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than us. And awareness makes things easy. When we're not aware, it's this easy. In fact, I got involved in meditation because someone told me they could elevate my awareness, and I wasn't interested until she said, well, I could elevate your awareness on when to buy or sell. And I'm like, oh, no, that's something I could use, and kind of tricked me into meditation. But that same person told me at that time, what vibrates the fastest? What thought vibrates the fastest? And as I listened to you, where my takeaways came from, everything resonated with how important it is to be truthful to self. If you're not truthful to yourself, if you don't do all the hard work, and it's painful to be promoted, and it happens within us all, and it takes gratitude and forgiveness and accountability and inspiration to be truthful with ourselves so we can be comfortable illuminating vulnerability so that other people say, hey, I'm okay. Yeah. These guys, they're going through the same thing every day, even when they're successful, or your roller coaster analogy. And I just encourage everyone to pursue their truth, not other people's truth, but their truth, and do it consistently every day, persistently without quit. And it is the pursuit of your truth, your potential, that'll elevate your awareness to make your life easy, to dissipate, dissolve, and disappear the dis-easy. Physical, mental, spiritual, emotional dis-ease can be dissipated with simply facing the truth and then being grateful for it, forgiving it, and accountable for it, finding a lesson in it, and living your life in spirit, inspired. And I promise you, if you allow that to come through you for others, you'll be happy, and you'll empower others to be happy. And if you do that, I certainly will be happy. And I, God bless all of you, and hopefully I'll see you afterwards. But thank you so much for coming.
Amazing. Well, certainly my takeaway, A, number one, is being able to sit with you, David. And this has been, from the first moment that we podcasted together to doing this in Vegas on a, you know, on a different scale, and then to be able to be in a, you know, beautiful theater with a guillotine being set up in the back. I don't know what that noise was. But to be able to just sit with you, David, obviously that for me is like a moment I'll never forget. So I hope that we make a lot of moments we never forget, and this is one of them, so thank you. To your wife as well, and everybody, your whole staff, everybody's treated me like a you know, like I'm supposed to be here, and that really means a lot to me. So thank you, David, on that. But my takeaway, I think this is probably maybe the first time in my entire career where I've really sat and allowed myself, not on a podcast where it's just a couple of people, you know, it's going to be edited, but I'm sitting in real time, and I'm not afraid to share every element. You know, I'm really sitting here as a very well-rounded person, that kid that was on the beach and was so unsure. Gosh, if you could look ahead and say, I can sit here, I can own my truth, I can be successful, I can have anything I want if I'm willing to work hard, and I'm also wanting to take as much spotlight as I can and bring other people into it so that by way of proxy with us, that somebody else can come to me and go, I did it too, and I love it. I root for people, and I realized that the kid that was so scared and dejected and alone, a lot of it was I would look at other people, and I just wanted to feel collaborative, and I wanted to feel like I fit in and that I was meant to be as much a part of whatever recess or something in the schoolroom or whatever it was, to be able to finally look at my life now and know this is the beginning of a participatory era where I can share everything. And anything I've learned, I'm going to share it. Every single thing, that I'll wring it out and hopefully flex tonight of what you said and what I said will make somebody in here make the world a little bit better for them and somebody else. So that's what my takeaway is. And I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank everybody who supported me and my wife and everybody who has believed in me and championed me to be able to just own my truth and continue to be that assertive guy that wants to get the laughs but also wants to feel like I'm a person you can look to as an example. You know, you can be scared in the world, but you can be on top. And it's going to happen a bunch of times. That's the challenge. We all signed up for it. It's okay. The failures are part of the success. You need it to get there. And I truly hope for each and every one of you for supporting us tonight that you're a little closer to your truth tonight. So thank you.
Let's hear it for Dane Cook. Thank you, everyone.
And David Meltzer.
So much.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
guys.
You. God bless you. Have a good night.
All right. Bye, guys.